And now, the opinion page. Every day, it seems, we learn more about Faisal Shahzad, the accused Times Square bomber. We know that he comes from a successful family in Pakistan, became a naturalized citizen, and married the American-born daughter of another prosperous Pakistani family. And in a piece for the Daily Beast, Asra Nomani tells us what she learned about the would-be bomber's wife, Huma Mian, from her profile on a social networking site, including what she lists as her passion, shopping, and her favorite TV show, Everybody Loves Raymond. Hardly what you'd expect from the wife of a would-be terrorist, but Nomani writes, that's a cause for concern because somehow in the West we are failing to give disenchanted yet talented young Muslims nonviolent avenues for protests to lure them away from the temptations of jihad. Cool. Well, we'd especially like to hear from our Muslim listeners today. How is your culture reaching out to young people? What are you teaching them? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Asra Nomani joins us here in Studio 3A. She's a contributor to The Daily Beast and author of Standing Alone, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam. Nice to have you back on the program today.
Thank you, Neil.
And what do you mean by jihad cool?
Well, you know, jihad cool is this phenomena inside of our Muslim community now where young men especially think that it is cool to go fight for the jihad, to get on a plane from here in Northern Virginia and go to a training camp in Pakistan, to join al-Qaeda at the frontier territories between Pakistan and Afghanistan against this American aggressor that is in Afghanistan. It has unfortunately become popularized through YouTube, Facebook, and all of these wonderful techniques of social networking that are being used by these clerics like Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen to lure our young boys, especially, to the dark side.
Yet this was not a young boy. This was an educated man, as you mentioned in the article, the son of a vice marshal in the Pakistani Air Force. His wife also, again, from a very successful family. He's American-born and owned a house in Connecticut, seemingly had a pretty good career.
You know, it's true that he wasn't a boy of teenage, but you know what's happening is that this is a kid who, he was 30 when he did this. It takes years, you know, to develop the kind of sympathies that end up becoming materialized in something like buying an Isuzu and lacing it with explosives, as crude as they may be, and putting it in Times Square. He got drawn, and I think so many young kids are being drawn to this idea that the West is the dark path, even while their families are getting all of the advantages of migration to the West. We're hearing it in our mosques. I can tell you that in my mosque in West Virginia, I heard it every Friday from these sermons that would be spoken by PhD graduate students, by engineering professors, folks who were getting all of the advantages of our open society, and yet on Thursday night downloading from Saudi websites sermons that basically said, don't imitate the path of the disbelievers, meaning the West. And this is exactly that slippery slope that ends up with something like this Times Square bomb attempt.
And more about the wife here in just a moment, but you said that it's important that we provide, nonviolent ways for them to... There are a million ways to express protest in this country.
I know, and the other part of my piece also said that I felt like our Muslim community, we are not educating and empowering our youth to take advantage of those nonviolent ways. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that if we turn the page back on history and look back at the civil rights movement, you know, this was the same moment that African American leaders faced when they had to try to encourage their youth to civil rights protests that were peaceful instead of protests for radicalization and the bombing of buildings. I mean, this is exactly where we're at in our Muslim communities. And what we do too often, I believe, is allow people like this Anwar al-Awlaki to roam freely through our mosques and go uncensored when he preaches things like he has done over a decade in America when he was here. And unfortunately, we are not also filtering for our young kids their messages as they're getting them through the internet now.
and it leads to what you describe as a bifurcated life, illustrated by this social networking site and what this young woman posted.
Yeah, you know, my heart just breaks for the story of Homa Mia, the wife of Faisal Shehzad. She could be me 20 years ago. She could be my younger sister. She is the immigrant girl next door. She probably didn't get to go to her high school prom like I didn't get to go because it wasn't what good Muslim girls do. But, you know, she lived this successful life in America, and she got that marriage that she was expected to have. She seemed madly in love with her husband. In this photo in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral, she, you know, just puts a caption, Faisal and I. You know, in another photo, she says, what can I say? He's my everything. And the one that just really broke my heart was she put her newborn daughter in a onesie, much like I put my son when he was born. This one was a bunny rabbit, and her caption was simply Bunny Wabbit. She was a girl who was not what you would think would end up in this kind of narrative, and yet this is exactly the story of her life, a woman whose husband attempts to do this bombing.
Have we heard anything from her since she moved back to Pakistan, since her husband moved her family back?
I have not been able to find her yet. And I tell you, I've got my cell phone filled with every Mia phone number in the Denver area because I'm trying to find that first cousin that knows exactly where she's at. And I hope we do hear from her because I think that America and I think the world wants to understand how something like this happens.
Her family's from Aurora, the Denver suburb.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking with Asra Nomani, and we'd like to hear from our Muslim listeners today. How is your culture reaching out to young people? What are they being taught? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Sabia, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, with us from Winter Springs in Florida.
Sabia.
Sabia, okay.
Okay. You know, like I just mentioned earlier to the person who picked up that we have like three young children who we make a point of taking them to Sunday school, to the mosque. And I remember that the central mosque in Orlando had the imam do like the khutbah on before the Friday prayers. He made a special point of talking about jihad and young Muslims going from America to fight jihad and you know, being found fighting jihad someplace else and all, and how that totally goes against the Muslims who are living here in America, who believe in, you know, tolerance and living with other religions and living peacefully. And so he was sort of warning and all and stuff, warning all the other Muslims who were congregated and all and stuff. And that is kind of the environment that my kids go to the mosque and all and stuff. And I think that, you know, if they were preaching otherwise, if they were saying that, you know, you should fight for Islam or jihad is what is good and all and stuff, what you should be involved in, we wouldn't be taking our kids there. So there's maybe a choice that the parents make also and all and stuff, or we can probably make it now because my kids are younger. And, you know, if they were older, then I guess things would be more up in the air and all and stuff, and they'd have to make up their mind like this young boy did and all and stuff. So,
Astrid?
I think that the point that Sabi's making is a really good one, which is, you know, just like we want to keep our kids from drugs, right? We want to keep them from becoming criminals of any kind. It is our responsibility ultimately to watch where they're going on their websites, what kind of sermons they're hearing, what they're learning at Sunday school. To me, you know, our responsibilities as parents doesn't stop also when they turn 18, clearly. You know, we want to be able to influence them, and we want to keep them from basically blowing themselves up or running off to some militant camp. What we see, though, from Minnesota to Northern Virginia to Faisal Shehzad's case is that, alas, we are losing some of these boys.
Does that worry you, Sabia?
Yes, it is very worrying, and I think that another point that was just made earlier adds to it, that the lack of education, possibly, I know, for example, like the mosque in Orlando and our mosque as well, has these special SAT classes for the Muslim youth that they have every weekend, because there is a growing sense that the there's not enough education amongst our youth and all and stuff. And then secondly, that they don't make the careers, or they don't have the career orientation, or the fact that they can have a profession, be it a boy or a girl and all and stuff. I think obviously for the girls, it's even more because culturally, you know, you're supposed to marry and you know, and be a part of your husband's family. But for the boys also. So I think that all adds to it also, because this gives you an alternative way of living and all and stuff if you have not succeeded in high school or have not gone on to college or whatever and all stuff. So they're trying to combat that with the SAT classes and getting them prepared for scholarships and colleges if, you know, if the parents can't afford college and things. But, you know, I don't know how many other people are doing it in the other Muslim communities all around the U.S.
And the other part of it is you hear about these Somali kids from Minnesota.
Right.
And somebody, Sabia, like you, might say, well, that's not me. But then you hear about the kids from Northern Virginia and this young man from Connecticut, and that's a different thing altogether. I mean, that strikes very close to home, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it does. And it is worrying. Yes.
Thank you very much for the call, and good luck to you.
Thank you for giving me airtime.
We're on the opinion page this week. We're talking with Asra Nomani about her piece in the Daily Beast. There's a link to it on our website. You can go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's see if we get another caller in. And this is Rama. Rama with us from Sarasota in Florida.
Hi, Neil. I just wanted to relate to the audience my story. When I was 14, I converted. Well, I didn't convert. I was raised in an Islamic family, but I began practicing Islam. And gradually, as I studied the faith, I realized the overt militant message that was involved. Because it was my understanding that Islam preached peace and practically nothing else. And as I descended into the faith, I realized that there was an overt militant message, and it caused me to turn from my faith.
Huh, interesting. What's your name again?
Excuse me?
What was your name again?
My name is Rommel.
Rommel, yeah, you know, what really frightens me, and what I also feel really concerned about, is not only the overt message, but the covert message. You know, I think what you're speaking about is this struggle inside of our community, where there are literal verses inside of the Quran that could be read to sanction domestic abuse, you know, that could be used to sanction lack of tolerance towards Jews and Christians, even suicide bombings, just like all of the faiths, right? And what we have, unfortunately, is both covertly and overtly messaging inside the community that sanctions those kind of interpretations. There is, just like all religions, the possibility for a peaceful interpretation of Islam, and that's what we need to have prevail inside of our mosques. Just like Sabia's story, just like what you were seeking, I believe, when you went to try to educate yourself more about Islam. And the truth is, the problem is inside of Islam, because it is about interpretation. And if we don't admit that inside of our community, then we're just pulling the wool over our own eyes.
Rama, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go next to Victor. And Victor's with us from Bloomfield Hills in Michigan.
Hi. I'm listening to this conversation with much interest. I think the conversation has gone from this particular individual's action to demonizing Islam. Well, there are circumstances that, unfortunately, we have no control on. Al-Qaeda was mentioned. According to our foreign policy experts, that has been marginalized. But we see new groups like Pakistani Taliban coming up. And there is a war. There is a war that's going on, and that does affect young people. Here in Michigan, we have a militia group called Hidari. Now, I mean, they take the inspiration from the Christian scriptures. No one calls Christianity is the cause of what they do. They are motivated by certain things. There are people who fly into IRS buildings because they are upset about something. No one really looks into their faith. We here in Michigan, if you come here next Saturday, 12 of our mosques have opened doors. we are advertising extensively. Come and see the Muslim community. The kind of messages that I'm hearing from Sister Nomani, I don't hear that in our mosque. Our mosque is called the Unity Center in Bloomfield Hills. We are very participating. We have a women's groups here that, and we're very much involved with the school district. I was elected on my school board.
Mm-hmm.
This Saturday we have Walk as One in downtown Detroit. We're walking with the rest of the.
Victor, I don't mean to interrupt. We just have a little time left. I wanted to give Asra Nomani a chance to respond.
I appreciate what you're doing inside of the community, but I have to say I'm just shaking my head because I think that, you know, the world is just so tired of us inside of our community not acknowledging that we've got a problem. It's not a demonization of Islam. This is a recognition of interpretations inside of our faith that are being used to draw young men into militancy and that's being used to justify suicide bombings. I mean, as many car washes and walks and soup kitchen moments we may have, it's beautiful because we need that. We need to be involved in our community, but we also need to take on this ideology of violence that is very real. I mean, I invite you to go to alminbar.com, go check out the websites, go to any of these YouTube videos that, you know, entice our young men into violence, and we have to realize this. I mean, until the uncles and the elders realize we've got a problem, we are losing that battle.
Problem focusing on just one aspect. You know, there are things that are multidimensional, and it sounds like you are on one track.
Well, Victor, just this one email that agrees with you from Karam in Plano, Texas. As someone who's attended Friday prayers for probably 200 times in my 40-plus years, I have to say I never heard the types of sermons preaching radicalization that Ms. Nomani speaks of. So this is obviously something that it goes on in some places, but not in others. So we'll have to accept that. Thank you very much for the call, Asra Nomani. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much, and thank everyone for caring for
this
our
world. This is NPR News.